The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. So we're here this morning to talk about firefighters, air traffic controllers, Leos, whoever Leo is, and other things as well. And to lead us in that discussion is Bob Braunstein, retired Fed.
Yes.
What agency?
Actually, the OCC, Comptroller of the Currency, and I was with the Treasury Department for a good part of my career.
Okay. And Bob knows benefits, and he's a fellow seminar presenter and a good guy. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Bob. Good to be back.
And Bob flew up from Florida just to be here for this show.
It's much better than the 6 feet of snow this time.
Okay. And my name is Bob Lines. I'm a tax finance type with NITP. So let's jump on into, and our ever-efficient engineer, Dorothy. So if you'd like to call us, and you should, give us a call at 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. Now, as I understand it, and you were telling me in the, quote, green room, end of quote, that oftentimes people say law enforcement officer. And that would be like an umbrella for all different types. But you were telling me it really isn't.
Actually, a lot of people confuse the early richer retirement formula with just being law enforcement. But it's a broader spectrum than that. You have a number of occupations within the federal government that require quite a bit of rigor, youthful exuberance, a number of just very special requirements that... You know, for instance, we've got firefighters, and in order to be a firefighter, you've got to be strong, and you've got to be able to, you know, do the rigors of the employment. Same thing with law enforcement. You've got to be able to catch the bad guys, et cetera. And those are physical requirements. Air traffic controllers have tremendous focus, the need for a lot of acuity. All of these things take a toll, and as a result, the jobs themselves are such that you really can't do them for the length of time that you could do other types of work. So what the government has done is essentially given them enhanced annuity formulas as well as mandatory earlier retirement dates. And the enhanced annuity formulas enable them more or less to make during their careers essentially what everybody else does, only on an accelerated basis. And they're also given some additional dispensations for the extra work that they do that's what you'd call administratively uncontrollable. All of this is factored into different types of annuity formulas for them. And in general, it's a broader spectrum than just law enforcement officers. It's law enforcement officers, it's firefighters, it's air traffic controllers, and there are even enhanced formulas for National Guard technicians.
Okay. Do you mind if we just drill into each one of them, not necessarily to the extreme depth, but let's take a federal firefighter. How does one rate as a federal firefighter?
When you say rate?
I mean... How do I know that I'm a federal firefighter?
Well, you would be in a firefighter position. You'd be responsible for, you know, essentially dealing with fires. You'd be working for one of the agencies that hires firefighters. You'd be in a special occupational category. You would be in a position that's, if it's primary, you're actually out there in the field tending to the fires, extinguishing them, dealing with the equipment. And then as you move up the line, you can actually move into secondary supervisory type jobs associated with the dispatching of those individuals to those scenarios.
Kind of what I was getting at there, you don't necessarily have to be putting out the fire, No. But you could be a manager. Could you be an admin person?
Usually not admin. That would be a separate career. But if you're actually involved with putting out the fires or you're directly involved with either controlling the work directly associated with that activity, then you could very well be in a covered position.
Okay, so pretty much somebody that's doing it knows it.
Yes.
Now, what else should they know that maybe they don't know? I mean, what is their enhanced formula? I think you used that term.
Yeah, and I mean, in essence, what we're looking at for most of these occupations, once they have 20 years of covered employment under the job, then ultimately, let's say if they had 20 years and changed horses to something else, when they reach the age of 50, they would be able to retire and gain an enhanced benefit. For example, under CSRS, instead of getting the general formula for that service, which, you know, let's just say what it is, it's 1.5% times the high three for the first 5 years, 1.75% for the next 5 years, and 2% for every year thereafter. With the enhanced formula for this special occupational category, each of the first 20 years is at 2.5%. And then all subsequent years generally is at 2%. I say generally because there are exceptions to this rule. Under FERS, it's 1.7% as opposed to 1%.
Okay, so in CSRS, and that's a dwindling breed, I would imagine, with retirement that early. But so 20 times, what did you say, 2.5?
Right. That's you're looking at roughly 50%. For that first
for
20
years.
Years
of hard service.
Correct.
And then after that, 2%, say they worked another 10 years, it'd be another 20 on top of that. So it would be 70%.
Correct. Now, understand also, though, that all of these jobs do have mandatory retirement ages. For the law enforcement folks, it's usually 57. For air traffic controllers, it's 56. And for firefighters, it's 55. Now, there are exceptions. Management can determine the need to keep somebody on board, and the agency heads are allowed to extend many of these appointments to age 60. There might even be instances where folks actually join the service. Say for a law enforcement person, they might join after their 37th birthday, which would take them beyond age 57 to retire, and they'd have to meet physical standards and so on and so forth. So there are exceptions, but in general, you're looking at mandatory retirement somewhere between 55 and 57 for these groups.
Okay, so a FERS person then would get what for the first 20 years?
1.7% for each year. I guess it's 34% mm-hmm. as opposed to 20%, which is what they typically would get in regular non-law enforcement, non-air traffic controller, or non-firefighter occupations.
How do, and again, we're just on firefighters. Now, how would a firefighter's compensation package, would it start much the same as anybody else going into the federal government, or do they get an elevated grade when they come in?
The grade structure is essentially the same. With the firefighters and the air traffic, and the law enforcement officers, you're looking in these jobs at, I guess, what's characterized as large amounts of administratively uncontrollable overtime work. So they get a certain amount of premium pay associated with that. The law enforcement folks call it law enforcement availability pay, or LEAP. And the firefighters may call it something else. But it's administratively uncontrollable. And because of the 24/7 nature of the work, it winds up being an add-on to the high three calculation when they actually retire. It's something that they can include in their high three, much the same way as another employee might be able to include locality pay. It's an extra component, and it can be substantial. For the law enforcement folks, it's 25% of base pay in most situations. Mm. So that's definitely a big benefit.
All righty. Now, air traffic controllers, what's their formula?
Well, their formula is similar, but they have, under CSRS rules, for example, this goes to show you the variation. The air traffic controller minimum benefit is either 50% of their high three or all of the service that they have using the general formula. So in other words, someone might have worked enough to get 60% under the general formula, and that would trump the 50% minimum. And that's different from both firefighters and air traffic controllers. And again, that particular formula is only available to the CSRS air traffic controllers. It does not flow over to the FERS side, so we have differences there. But by and large, air traffic controllers under CSRS and under FERS, generally after 25 years of service in those covered jobs, can retire.
Could they spin off and become a supervisor, or would that count in that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They can, and all of these jobs go to supervisory positions.
And all these are high-stress jobs.
They are. And that's the reason for the mandatory retirement age at earlier ages. Actually, the government in general, years ago, used to have a mandatory retirement age of 70, and that no longer exists. The only jobs that really compel you to leave early are these types of positions, where they're, you know, you have tremendous amounts of physical and mental stress associated with them, as well as unpredictable hours.
Now then, would a law enforcement officer be everybody else that isn't a firefighter or an air traffic controller?
Well, law enforcement officer is also a huge umbrella. I mean, you're looking at criminal investigators such as in the FBI, DEA, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. You're also looking at Capitol Police, Supreme Court Police. There's a variety of uniform types and non-uniform, and they're all brought under the law enforcement umbrella. And this, the latter group that I mentioned, the Supreme Court folks and the Capitol Police, you're looking at even different scenarios as far as what they're entitled to receive. Because, you know, when you're working in the legislative branch, once you have 5 years of service, you're looking under CSRS at 2.5% for every year that you serve. So it's not necessarily limited to just the law enforcement work. It's any work that you did. So those folks can be looking at even more enriched formulas.
This is more inquisitive, and I don't mean to put you on the spot with this one, but what about somebody in the intelligence community? Mm. Could there ever be a crossover between law enforcement? And I know that's not a fair question. I just thought of it. Because, as you well know, we speak to all these groups. We speak to firefighter groups. We talk to air traffic controllers, law enforcement, wherever they might be, as well as the intelligence community, many of the agencies.
Each agency that has positions in these covered areas is required to certify and list them with the Office of Personnel Management. So if they indeed would fall into one of either the LEO or firefighter or air traffic controller categories, it would be a requirement for the agency to, number one, have the jobs in the category listed. For example, when the Transportation Security Administration became an agency, which was recent in 2002, they had a number of law enforcement positions which flowed over from FAA and other areas, but they had to be relisted and recertified because it was a new agency. So if you're in a covered job, and people typically refer to it as 6C retirement, which is short for Section 8336C, and the C stands for the law enforcement people, what 8336 stands for is early retirement in general. But the subcategory of C for law enforcement, and I think it's E for firefighters, allows those occupations to go early. Everybody else, early retirement depends upon, well, is the agency downsizing or right-sizing, or is your job being abolished, and do you meet certain age and service specifications? And that falls under 8336. But 6C retirement is typically for law enforcement.
And I thought the tax code was complicated.
Well, it is. It is for me anyway, which is why I go to you.
And that's why we have mutual respect for one another. Okay. All right, so my head is spinning a little bit with those numbers. I thought we were talking about the tax code for a second.
Uh-oh.
Heavens forbid. But then beyond that, do people, let's say you go in administratively, and you're definitely not a LEO, you're definitely not an air traffic controller, and you're definitely not a firefighter. Can those people switch into one of these three categories we just talked about?
Sure. Now, again, there are qualification requirements. You have to be physically able to do the work. Let me use myself as an example. Years ago, before federal air marshals, they had a program called Sky Marshals. And I was working in the HR business, and I thought, you know, gee, it would be a great idea. Maybe I could be a sky marshal. You know, I wasn't doing much flying in those days, and I thought it'd be a lot of fun to, you know, pick up a law enforcement career. One of the first things they asked me when I came in, and, you know, I had a pretty impressive interview, was, do you wear those glasses all the time? And, of course, I wasn't wearing contacts. I had, you know, the typical 1970 big, thick Coke bottle glasses, and I thought they looked cool. But the problem was, without 20/20 eyesight, I couldn't qualify. So your question, simply put, is that, yes, you could switch to these occupational categories, but you have to pass a variety of standards, many of which are physical. And if you can't meet those standards, you can't go into those jobs.
So in other words, somebody over the age of 40, certainly 45, is going to have a rigorous set of tests to meet before they could go in if they felt their calling was to be one of these three.
And it's usually rare. The law enforcement community in general won't pick you up in the federal government if you're over the age of 37 in most circumstances, because you've got to be 57 to retire. So you've got to get your 20 years in. Now, like I say, there are exceptions that are made from time to time, but and for the most part, they try to ascribe to that as much as they can. So it's tough to get in once you get beyond, say, 30, 35, 36.
Okay, let's say we get in. What should one look at? And I'm going to march you through, if you don't mind, beginning, mid. I always do this.
Sure.
And pre-retirement. So the new kid on the block, if you will, the recent hire, what should they be thinking about other than maybe some of the things we've talked about on other shows, life insurance, et cetera, especially in this case, life insurance. But is there anything special that they should be looking at?
Well, the great thing about, and again, I'll focus on the law enforcement area. Once you're vested, once you've got time in, once you know this is going to be your career, you already recognize that you have to leave early. So you're planning, you're accelerating somewhat, and you're the investment counselor too. You probably would want to position TSP, for example, in a manner that if you did need to use it at 56 or 57 years of age, you'd be investing it, you know, along that time horizon, perhaps through L funds. The really terrific elements of law enforcement retirement, for example, if you're in FERS, which is where most people are right now, when you retire, typically under FERS, cost of living increases associated with your pension don't accrue until you've reached the age of 62. And sometime after that, actually, it's after your 62nd birthday. When you're in law enforcement, your COLAs will begin right away. Because again, you're compelled to leave because, you know, you could retire as early as 50, or if you have your 25 years of service in and you're before the age of 50, you'll get COLAs. The other thing that's really neat about these retirements is that the supplement that's paid by OPM to bridge the gap between the annuity and Social Security, which is referred to as the FERS annuity supplement.
But this is just for FERS, folks.
This
right?
is for FERS, and I'm mentioning FERS because I think the majority of folks in the workforce now certainly are FERS. These folks typically would not be eligible. When I say FERS employees in general aren't eligible for the FERS supplement until they reach what's termed their minimum retirement age, usually somewhere between 56 and 57. The law enforcement community is not bound by those rules. They get their FERS supplements as soon as they retire. And the other thing about FERS supplements is that they're income tested much the same way as Social Security is. It's diminished by other work from another job or self-employment. That income test in the law enforcement community and the firefighter community, once you start your FERS supplement, that income test doesn't begin until you reach what otherwise would be the minimum retirement age for non-LEO, non-firefighter occupations, 56, 57. So you get years of FERS supplement without the income test. So there are a whole variety of dispensations given to these folks because they're essentially compelled to leave the workforce much faster than the rest of us.
And those listening, don't take those words lightly, because I find, at least in talking to these different groups, there's a high percentage of people that at a minimum go off to a second career, but also I'm surprised at the percentage that go into self-employment or have already started ramping up for self-employment.
Correct. And that's, you raise a very excellent point. I think we glanced off it initially when we were talking, but if a law enforcement person is reaching, say, for instance, mandatory retirement at 57, or if a firefighter is, and they decide they'd like to change horses and stay in the government and go to another occupational category, they can certainly do that. And ultimately, whenever they retire, they will get the enriched formula by having qualified and having gained at least 20 years of covered employment under that occupation. So it's really kind of neat. Even if you haven't reached what would otherwise be your retirement age, let's say a FERS employee who's been a firefighter for 20 years and is 43 years of age and decides, I'd rather do something else, and they do something else in the government for 7 years, and they reach the age of 50 and decide, okay, I'm going to retire now, which they could do because they have 20 years as a firefighter, even though the last number of years was not in that occupational category.
Wow. Okay, let's switch a dial now to the mid-career person. What should they be looking out at forward? Say, okay, I've got so many years left before I hit my mandatory number. What do they look to do? I mean, certainly they want to maximize their thrift if possible, but what else do they do?
Well, you know, I really think that most of them need to consider, if I do have to leave the workforce at a certain age, am I really going to be unemployable? And if in my current occupational category, and if I am, what else can I be positioning myself to do? What other skills can I pick up along the way? You see, many folks will become managers, and there's managerial skills are essentially transferable to a variety of different areas. They can become experts in their field and wind up being consultants to agencies. There's nothing to suggest that just because you're leaving the federal workforce that you don't have a great amount of utility and you can't come back externally to do work like that. Again, this is not so much retirement planning as it is positioning yourself for continuing in the workforce, which many of us are doing anyway now for a variety of reasons. As far as mid-career planning, when we teach seminars, what we're really trying to get people aware of is how much covered service do you have? In other words, what would be the impact if you left law enforcement or a firefighter position and then came back to work? Let's say, for instance, and this is kind of an interesting scenario. You started out as a street special agent, and you moved up, and then later along those lines moved immediately into a secondary covered position, one that's supervisory. But then you left the government, and you came back. Technically, you would need to reestablish your eligibility to retire by going back to a primary position first. You couldn't go directly back to a secondary job. Now, there probably are exceptions to that rule, but by and large, you need to reestablish your ability. So one of the things that we need to focus on when we talk to these folks is that your ability to retire under the enhanced formulas is to maintain this covered line of activity throughout your career, either primary or what they call in air traffic controllers, they call it front line, or front line or supervisory. Firefighters, they're either actually out there and doing the work or their supervisors, primary positions that are law enforcement versus secondary, which are supervisory. I mean, all of these things will count, but when you have breaks in coverage, you've got to be careful to come back in and reestablish it the right way. And the agency knows how to do this. Otherwise, you could run the risk of not ultimately being eligible to retire under these special provisions if you have a break in coverage and didn't come back the right way.
Great. I got here a little early today, which is very different for me. And I was talking with Mike Causey, and Mike told me that OPM had done a kind of like a job satisfaction survey. And by the way, it's going to be on OPM's website sometime today, if it isn't already today. And it's on Fed, F-E-D, View, V-I-E-W, .opm.gov. Fed View. OPM, Gov. Now, what he said is in that, I'm sure it's a gazillion pages, and we talked before that you've seen things like this, but I believe it dealt with job or personal satisfaction and people that telecommute and whether they were happy with their pay or whatnot. And I'm be interested in taking a look at that. But when somebody is in mid-career, now we're talking about folks under air traffic controllers or firefighters or whatever at the mid-career level, they might want to look at this because sometimes when we talk, not sometimes, oftentimes when we talk in classes where most of the class is very receptive, some of them are, just kind of unhappy that they're, quote, not treated fairly, end of quote, and you have to remind them that, yes, you are. And oftentimes they'll say, I never looked at it that way, but this job satisfaction report seems to, I guess, would mirror that or not mirror that.
Sure.
And you've seen these things before?
I have, and it's interesting. I mean, sometimes the statistics will jump out at you. I mean, in my experience, when these types of surveys were taken, by and large, most of the federal employees I worked with were pretty much satisfied with their jobs. Yeah, we always have issues with our bosses and so on and so forth, but satisfied with jobs and pay. And I think to some extent today, where information is so much more prevalent 24/7 to everybody about what's going on in the rest of the world economically. I mean, when you consider a federal career and its relative stability in comparison with other industries right now that are really subject to the recessionary pressures and so on, it's a great life. The percentages you're going to see in most of these surveys reflect that more so perhaps than they did in the past.
Yeah, and your own personal situation. I don't think I should be talking about your own personal situation, okay. But you retired as a kid.
I did.
And then you went off and wrote software.
I reinvented myself. I was very fortunate enough to be able to take an early out with what they call voluntary separation incentive pay, also known as a buyout. And I did that at the tender age of 49. It was a number of years ago. But since then, I've been able to sort of reinvent myself and come back in as an external, do work for you as a teacher, and capitalize on the work that I learned throughout my federal career. I wasn't always in benefits. I had 5 or 6 years in the field, but picked it up because it was always my first love. And the nice thing about it with the HR profession and very, very often with the professions we're talking about today is that you do have opportunities beyond the federal workplace. You could even come back as a reemployed annuitant. Reemployed annuitants in general are going to lose a certain amount of money based on the offset of their pay by their pensions. But if you can come back as a contractor or a consultant and work for the organization externally as an expert, then it's a great opportunity to continue the relationship, to continue your satisfaction, and, of course, to continue the pay, which is very important.
And I would think with these categories, too, there's a high demand for each one of the three.
Definitely.
And I was reading about air traffic controllers. A lot of the, I guess, Vietnam-era vets are looking at retirement now, and there is an opportunity there for folks that would gravitate towards that, as well as law enforcement officers. And I would assume there's always a need for firefighters.
Absolutely.
Fortunately, or if you look at it another way, unfortunately. But fortunately, we got a professional group that does it.
These are growth fields. Security certainly is. It's not going away anytime soon. That's for sure. And we're thankful we have them.
Yeah. And alrighty, so pre-retirement, what are we thinking about?
Again, when you have to go, assuming that you don't have any exceptions and you're in one of these categories and you've reached an age and it's time for you to leave, it's a matter of understanding what are my options. I can draw my pension right away. If I'm under FERS, I get my FERS annuity supplement. That comes right away without any income testing until I reach the traditional MRAs for other occupations. I'm not eligible for Social Security, but I could start drawing down my thrift. There are a couple of ways of doing that. If you needed to use your thrift plan, one of two ways of doing it is to annuitize it and thereby avoid the penalty. You could purchase an annuity from MetLife, and I know I'm preaching to the choir on this one, because you tell me what to do. The other thing is that if you wanted to keep an active TSP account without changing it to an annuity, if you needed to draw the annuity immediately, not the annuity, but a payment from TSP immediately, you could do it in the form of a life expectancy payment stream, which would have to stay in effect until you were 59 and a half or for a period of 7 years or 5 years, whichever lasts the longest. That's right. And again, these are things that I think any retirement planner would tell you, like, what are you thinking about doing when you leave? I mean, what's your lifestyle going to be? Will you continue to work? And if not, what's it going to cost you to do these things? And then it's a matter of assessing, I have a pension. If I don't have Social Security, I have the FERS annuity supplement. Then I'll ultimately have Social Security, and I will have some drawdown from TSP, whatever that becomes. Is this sufficient? And if it isn't, maybe I need to do some different investment strategies or perhaps continue working part-time or whatever in order to do the things that I want to do.
Let's say I'm a few years away from mandatory retirement. I really like my job. I know I can't do this particular job after whatever that period of time is, 2 or 3 years. Should I start looking at supervisory positions? One would probably know what that entails, but should I look and say, well, maybe I've always wanted to work for another agency? Can you put feelers out that early, 2 or 3 years before you leave? And does that get you in trouble?
I think it really depends. I think the universe of these positions, I mean, particularly, well, law enforcement it's somewhat of a closed community. I think people know who other people are in different organizations, but they all have their own culture. They all have your ability to be promoted within a specific organization sometimes depends on the tenure you have in that organization. But there's nothing to suggest that you can't make a switch. My thinking is that if I were in one of these fields and I could see the end coming and I wasn't yet ready to quit working, then I'd be putting feelers out to determine, you know, what could I switch to within the organization where I would still add value, and start talking to those folks and say, you know, in the next few years I'm going to be retiring from this job, but what I would really like to do is, you know, lend my expertise to your operation. And you do that within organizations and outside of organizations. I think everybody's a realist. If you know you're not going to be able to stick around long enough because long enough to satisfy your career objectives because you're, you know, reaching that mandatory retirement age, then it's just a matter of where can I work? And I would imagine there's a quite a bit of understanding associated with that, you know, particularly as people reach those ages. So are you shooting yourself in the foot when you start to send out feelers? I don't really think you are. I don't think so. I think that's a natural course of events for those who want to stay active in the workforce but can no longer remain in one of these occupations.
Yeah, and the stress level, too. One might want to dial that down.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Billy, who is an air traffic controller, and what it boils down to is you reach a certain age, and I guess it's been somewhat scientifically determined that the focus that you need to do that level of work begins to diminish to the point where you're not effective, and you're basically you place the system at risk if you stay beyond those ages.
Certainly not in his case. He was talking about others.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's a shout out to Billy.
All righty, I'll take a little segue into taxes, and then we'll come back. I'll put the folks to sleep, and y'all can come back in a few minutes. But probably should listen to it. When one retires under what's called a public safety officer, this was a change in the law just a few years ago, and affectionately called PSO, public safety officer. And it says that if one retires under that umbrella, that besides the tax benefit that everybody gets as a retired federal employee, not all of their annuity is subject to income tax. Now, we're talking about their annuity based on years in service and high three. We're not talking about the thrift annuity. They can subtract a certain amount. But in addition to that, if they have health insurance and or long-term care insurance withheld from their annuity check, then they can subtract up to another $3,000, or the health insurance and or long-term care insurance up to $3,000. So if it was more than $3,000, they'd get another $3,000 deduction over top the normal one. And if it was under that, let's say it's $2,526, you'd get another $2,526 as a subtraction. But the key here is the tax subtraction that we first talked about that everybody gets is automatically done by OPM.
Correct.
The second one is not. So it's a manual computation, and it's kind of crazy. All this information goes on 1040, goes on the same line, line 16. Line 16, it's got a box A, it's got a box B. If you are entitled to this additional subtraction for health insurance or long-term care insurance, it's kind of silly, and not silly, it's kind of crazy. You just write the initials PSO to the left of box 16B and subtract it from what OPM has already calculated your non-taxable portion to be. I would say a fair number of people miss this.
Yeah,
they're in this category. Not because they're not intelligent, not because of anything else, not because some program they use. Any program, whether it's one that I use or anybody else uses, it's only as good as the information you put into it. So there's a box somewhere on the input screen that says, is this person a PSO, public safety officer? And I'm sure public safety officers would definitely include law enforcement and firefighters. Also includes chaplains.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure it includes air traffic controllers.
No, it doesn't seem to.
No.
It's firefighters, ambulance workers, state employees dealing with criminals. Actually defined in something called the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. That's the general definition. And again, this employees, unless they opt out of it while they're working, get this thing called premium conversion, which in essence, like you say, OPM will automatically allow them to pay their federal employees' health benefits premiums on a pre-tax basis. So they're not paying income on that money that goes into those premiums. And what you're talking about is once you've actually retired and you fit the category of public safety officer, as long as you self-certify on your 1040, then you're given up to another $3,000 for health insurance and long-term care premiums that's also not taxable.
Okay, so let me underline that, too. This is just for public safety officers. So everyone
Correct.
Else listening going, oh, I didn't get that last year. Well, you're not going to get it unless you're a public safety officer.
But who knows? Maybe this is the first of a wave of things to come. You never know.
Well, I can
only hope.
Okay. Then there's another comment you made, and you were right on target. Because a fair number of people retire at an age younger than 55, under these categories we just talked about, a lot of these people now are FERS. They've put money away in their TSP to help fund their retirement. And they go into retirement and say, I'm going to take out this amount per month. And then somebody reminds them that you are absolutely entitled to do that, but because you retired, now get this, before the year in which you become 55. So I don't want to put people to sleep. Let's just say they retired at age 54 or earlier. They're entitled to take a monthly income stream from the TSP, but it has to be spread out over their lifetime. They call this annuitizing. If it's not, it's subject to not only the income tax, federal and state, depending on what state they live in, but a 10% penalty. So the hit could be substantial. But we're not here to talk about how to pay the penalty. It's how not to pay the penalty and certainly be legal. We'd never want to do anything illegal. But Bob mentioned annuitizing it. That's not buying the thrift annuity. That's just taking the dollar amount you have at the end of the year, and for the next year you divide it by what IRS thinks is going to be your life expectancy chart, and that's an IRS publication 590, and that goes from age 1 on up to 115. And you just look at that, and if the life expectancy is 30 years, you divide 30 into the value, and that's what you have to take out that year to keep under the penalty radar screen. Now, there's another one that people, I think, are vaguely familiar with, or maybe not. They call it the 72T rules. Anytime in taxes, when you see a number associated with something, 72T, that's the IRS code. 529 plans, college education plans, 401k plans, somewhat like the thrift. The thrift is not a 401k, but it walks and quacks like one. Anyway, these 72T rules allow you three different ways to calculate it. What's nice about it is one of those three is annuitizing that we just talked about. Another one, and I won't even try to explain it, uses percentage rates of return and government rates and some percentage of the government rates. But without trying to drive you nuts with it, what's attractive about this is it could be a lot higher than the annuitized number, and you're still exempted from the penalty.
I want to hear more about that one.
I'm going to put some people to sleep, but again, there's three different ways to do it. The annuitizing we talked about divided by a life expectancy. The other one is to say, okay, I've got this amount in my thrift or for that matter, the IRA, and you don't have to do it with both. You could do it with either, and you could take out what you feel would be a certain percent. And they go, no, it isn't what you think it is. They use the federal rate, which is currently about 2.83%. Now, here's where I'm going to derail everybody. You multiply that number by 120%, in other words, 1.2. And that's going to be somewhere around 3.5%, and that's what you would take out of your pension. That's what you would take out of your thrift or your IRA that year, which could be substantially higher than the annuitizing.
It sounds almost like the percentage you'd take the first year of minimum required distributions. It's at that level.
It's even better than that.
Wow.
It's even better than that. Remember now, in today's interest rate environment, interest rates are very low. So as interest rates go up, the percentage that you can take out, I mean, let's hope we don't see 5% interest rates, but then you're talking about 6% of the money you can take out. Wow. Now, be aware, though, yes, it gives you a greater amount, but it's also decreasing your investment. So, you know, you could run out of spendable money. You'll never run out of money. Mathematically, it's impossible, but you might not be able to buy a coffee with it.
That's really true. One of the things you're talking about here, though, is that you're not buying an annuity from MetLife. You're still managing your account, so you could theoretically run out of money if you're not careful.
And you need to be careful with this too. Here's the other proviso: you can't mess with the principal. So, in other words, you can't add money to the principal, or you can't subtract money out other than the subtraction. So, and you have to do it for at least 5 years or until you hit 59 and a half, whichever is later. And the key is the day you hit 59 and a half. So if you do it in the year that you hit 59 and a half, let's say you did it 2 months before and then you stop doing it, they'll go back and repenalize you for every year that you did this. So I don't mean to drive people crazy with this. I probably lost 99.9% of the group, and I don't mean to do it. I hope 99.9% of the group says, I wasn't aware of that. Well, there's a website. Oddly enough, it's called 72T. So just go to Google or whatever, Yahoo, whatever you use, and hit 72T rules. And out will pop, and you can do this, and you can use a little calculator on it. So I would say it's somewhat unknown, but it's not unknown.
It's great information, particularly, you know, when you think about it. And you raised a very good point, Bob. But I've been hearing, statistically speaking, that those who retire under FERS oftentimes are drawing up to 40% of their income from TSP. So it's an extremely valuable component. And if you wind up having to retire either mandatorily or early and don't really intend to do a lot of work, one of the things you really need to know is, what are my options for using this extremely important component of my retirement package?
And also remember, folks, you're not stuck with this for the rest of your life. So you have to do it for at least 5 years or until you hit 59 and a half, whichever is later.
And what can you do then?
Then you can just stop.
Really? Now, what could you do? What if you wanted to say, well, you know, I don't want to follow these life expectancy payment streams. Maybe I want to, you know, go out in a blaze of glory and I want to increase my monthly payment to $3,500 a month. I mean, can you do that?
Sure.
Yeah.
And sure.
You can. I've heard
TSP or IRA.
Sure. So it's just once you hit 59 and a half or 5 years, whichever is
the
longer period.
The penalty rule is off the table.
Got it.
But it's 5 years. So if somebody started doing this at 57... their end line is 62.
Got it.
For this provision. So in making the decision, if one has an IRA or a thrift or both, then maybe you want to do it with one and not the other. And you know, you can move money between the two. A little tougher to move the IRA money into the thrift, but not impossible. And then just leave one source kind of by itself just in case. But in the other one, you're not handcuffed. Law enforcement for life. It's just for those 5 years or 59 and a half years of age or older. And again, I wouldn't expect anybody to understand everything I just said, but I would hope that they would just go in, Google 72T rules, and look for the website that says 72T. There's a bunch of different websites that'll pop up, but the one that you can actually use, and it's free for the calculation, and I think it's the best site on there about that, would be 72T.
And when I read that, I'm going to probably have to call you, but that's where I'll start.
That's okay. And if anybody wants to email us, I can see nobody wants to call us, but if anybody wants to email us, we're at For Your Benefit, F-O-R, Your, Y-O-U-R, Benefit, B-E-N-E-F-I-T, at NITPINC.com. For Your Benefit, at NITPINC.com. I know when people listen to the show. They listen to it as best they can during the day, but again, we're on at 10:05 a.m. Monday mornings, and we're off at 10:58 and a half, or Dorothy cuts us off, each Monday morning. So, you know, you can't call us then, but you can email us 24/7, and we can tell when people start to listen, because the emails flow in Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and then they taper off a little bit after that. And again, we're doing it Eastern time, but you can listen to this worldwide. Anyway, enough tax preaching. I'll save that to when I go back to work later. Benefits, back to the benefits. I really like what you did, Bob. Bob scripted this, by the way, and I just read it because I'm not so sure I understand it. And so we talked about firefighters, air traffic controllers, LEOs, and the special provisions that they have to get in. I think you called it an enhanced formula for their annuity.
Right. Interestingly enough, they actually have to pay a greater percentage of base pay for the retirement contributions. On the CSRS side, instead of a typical 7% per year, it's 7.5. And under FERS, instead of 0.8 of 1%, it's into the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund is 1.3. It's another 0.5%. So they pay more for retirement, but they get an enriched formula, and they're able to retire earlier. Well, they have to because of the mandatory retirement ages.
Well, and the stress level, and you know, they're worth it.
It's true. By the way, there was a recent change that came up. You actually sent me a tidbit on this. having to do with disability retirements when you're under one of these occupational categories. Until this particular change, anyone who essentially was derailed because of a disability from meeting their 20 years of covered service requirement wound up having to retire under the minimum disability formula, which under CSRS is 40% of your high three or projection of service to age 60, whichever produces the lesser benefit. What, in essence, this new law does now is it says it gives you credit for the service that you served in the special occupational category at the enhanced rate if you're retiring under disability while you're still in one of those jobs. And that could mean a big difference in the amount that you could get. In essence, what it does is it adds a new component to the determination as to what your disability annuity will be. It's either going to be the minimum or what we call your earned benefit. If we took and gave you the enhanced formula for the years that you did serve in the special category before you were disabled. So it's a kind of a, you look at one or the other. Now, there are many, many eddies and currents associated with this, and it varies from law enforcement to air traffic controller because the requirements are different. Even within the law enforcement community, it's going to be different for traditional law enforcement officers versus Supreme Court police, Capitol Police. There are different rules associated with congressional employees. It's really important to understand the calculation. But in essence, what it simply does is it says no longer do you necessarily have to come to term within these occupations and qualify to retire as that type of an individual, as a firefighter or a law enforcement officer. If you're disabled while this happens and you don't have as much service, then we're going to use the disability rules combined with this new earned benefit as if you, you know, just simply get the credit for the time when you were disabled under the enhanced formula.
Did you say eddies and currents?
Eddies and currents.
Is that a band?
Well, eddies is a band. Currents, I think, is something you eat. It's hard to know.
And then you did Sky Marshals. Is that like Sky King? I'm really aging myself.
Isn't it amazing? Sky Marshals, now they're FAMs, Federal Air Marshals.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to being serious. Sorry, Bob. You're the serious of the two.
I try.
All righty. Job possibilities now. I would think, and I'm be frank, I don't watch the job market for any federal employee. I look at the tax angles and the finance. But firefighters, I would think that's popular. Air traffic controllers, although I'd imagine you have to meet a fairly rigorous test to become an air traffic controller.
I think so. And again, you know, when you consider the stress factor associated with that job and what we've learned about, you know, scientifically, that your level of focus begins to diminish with age, I think you're viable as long as you're below what they would consider to be the minimum of the mandatory retirement age. And again, that can be extended in some cases up to age 60 by agency heads.
And I would think law enforcement officers with the changes in the laws, that would be fairly wide open. And law enforcement, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, that could be almost any agency.
Sure.
I mean, you would think that some clearly are, but I remember being someplace and it was a social agency, actually. And somebody said, what about Leo's? And I said, you know, I kind of said in this room, and a few of them said, yeah, because this is what we do.
Right. I mean, there's white collar crime. There's, you know, actually apprehending criminals. It depends upon the organization. But many organizations, although you wouldn't think, have law enforcement officers, actually do.
Yeah. One of the ones that I won't say surprised, but Postal Service. And I go,
yep.
Really? And yeah.
Absolutely. Postal Service, well, off the top of my head, it's hard for me to even remember. I didn't make a list, but it's rather you know, it's unusual. You don't think about it. They don't have huge cadres. You know, the ones that typically come to mind when you think of law enforcement is FBI, Drug Enforcement Administration, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, organizations like that, where you know you have that's their primary mission and then their primary occupation. So law enforcement opportunities in other organizations are. I wouldn't call them sidebars, but they aren't the primary mission. They're associated with the mission.
The toughest seminar I ever did and probably ever will do was at Quantico in front of a group of DEA pre-retirement agents. And they just pounded on me for 3 hours, very nicely. I don't mean that in a negative sense. And I was drained, but I'd really liked, and I walked out with the training officer, and I said, well, what's with them? And they said all their life they've trained their focus on the drug dealers and finding the law to capture them. Now they're retired and they want to be within the law, within the IRS, but not lose any money. And it just, I'll just never forget that. And
yeah.
For as long as I do these things, I'll never forget that day. It was 3 hours. Well, what if, how can I? It was great.
Let me, I've ignored a particular group that I feel terrible about, the Customs and Border Patrol officers. Those are folks that are also in this area. And interestingly enough, with respect to the disability formula, they get the enriched benefit if they went on a disability, but the service that's enrichable, if you will, has to have been sometime after July 6th, 2008. But that's, again, that's another group that falls within, I guess you would say, the law enforcement community, and also subject to these new disability rules, but even yet more restrictive because it's going forward that their service would count, whereas the other groups, it's essentially any service they had up to now.
All right, next question is not technical, but maybe personal. Now, we got just a couple more minutes. When you were a Fed, what got you to go to the law enforcement agency? Because as I understand it, you didn't start as a law enforcement officer.
No, and I was, well, actually never was a law enforcement officer, but it was serendipity. I was working in the IRS, and the IRS at that time had a division known as the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division. And that organization in 1972 was spun off from the IRS and became a separate bureau of the Treasury. It's now actually Bureau of the Department of Justice. And shortly after that happened, I had some connections in the organization, and I sort of jumped ship and moved into an HR job working in ATF. And I was with them for the better part of 9 years. Actually, I basically grew up in the HR business and went through a variety of different types of positions, even into some supervisory ones while I was there, before I went to the OCC. So it wasn't so much that I had my eyes on a law enforcement organization, but there was a promotional opportunity for me there, and I wound up seizing it and sticking around and really liking it. Oddly enough, the person that I'm married to, whom you know very well, Judy, is a former ATF agent. And what's particularly neat about that is that I can enjoy the premium conversion benefit for our health insurance because I'm under her plan.
Yeah, and Judy, statuesque, very nice person, extremely bright, very nice looking, and probably the last one you'd figure would have a gun somewhere.
Yeah, it's funny. And to end on an anecdote, when I first met Judy, we used to tell people that I was involved in barbershop quartet singing, and I sang with a big chorus, and I was in a big kick line out front, and she carried the gun. She carried the gun. So you talk about role reversal. My husband's in a kick line, and I chase the bad guys.
With that, we can't go any further. And Dorothy's got the hook out for us. Final comments, Bob?
I would just say that thanks to all of the folks who are involved in these jobs, we need you desperately. And just be aware of the fact that you're on an accelerated schedule.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Educational as always. Please listen again next week and tell your folks to download the show today. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.